I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, everything up to and including an income tax is at stake in tomorrow's election. Plus, a leftist political action committee paints anyone who isn't a socialist as a mega Trumper. And it's been 10 years since Seattle and King County declared a state of emergency around homelessness. Gee, how's that going? That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month, like so many of you have over the past 4 years. This week marks 4 years since we launched Undivided. So a big thank you to those of you who have stepped up to support our little independent show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Can you believe it? 4 years this week of Undivided. For those of you who've been with us from the beginning, wow, we've grown quite a bit from the days when I used to put out one episode a week from the spare bedroom of my house. And then, gosh, Nicole's been with us for like 2 years now, I think. It's just wild. And we have so much more growing to do. So from the bottom of my heart, a huge thank you to those of you who, from the beginning, before you even knew what Undivided would really be, said, yeah, I trust Brandi and I want to help build independent media. And I think hopefully we've made a difference in the state of Washington in this time. And we have a lot more to do. Also, I don't feel great today. But, you know, couldn't miss this week. We had a short week last week. So I'm just warning you that I woke up with a little itch in my throat. And it's only gotten exponentially worse. So sorry if I'm coughing and gagging and clearing my throat throughout the episode. That should be fun for you. But we just have too much going on. There's an election tomorrow, off your election. But there is so much at stake. And I mentioned in the cold open of the show today that one of the things that's at stake for Washington voters is a potential income tax. And you might be thinking, Brandi, there's no income tax on the ballot. Oh, yes, there is. Okay. An income tax is absolutely on the ballot, because if we don't start to chip away at one party rule in Olympia, they are going to push through an unconstitutional income tax. But it's not going to matter, because basically they do whatever they want. This was a story that came out over the weekend from the Washington State Standard. We'd also heard some rumors and rumbling of this. Washington State Democrats look at imposing income tax on high earners. The idea is brewing ahead of the 2026 legislative session. It would target those making above $1 million. Our state is one of nine that does not tax wages. And of course, this has been the prize that Democrats have had their eye on in Washington State for a long time. And I really believe that this is what they have been working toward as they've passed new tax after new tax after new tax. I think they want you to feel so taxed out that they'll come to you and they'll sell this tale of, you know, let us just do an income tax. We'll get rid of all the other ones, all these taxes that have a disproportionate impact on the poor. Let us pass this tax that would tax only people making over $1 million. Come on. You know, a few of us make only over $1 million. We're not going to have to pay this tax. It's just going to be the richies of the rich. And I'm worried that they're going to be able to sell that to enough Washingtonians to make it possible. And when they say, and this is how, again, they'll spin it, you know how this works, tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. And that's worked so many times. But when have those taxes ever stayed in the form that they were first passed in? I mean, look at the capital gains tax. It was like, oh, we're just taxing the Jeff Bezoses of the world. And it's like, no. And then immediately they come back and they reduce the threshold and they reduce the threshold. So if they were to try to fit through and get through and it passed, you know, the state Supreme Court, which I think isn't a problem because the state Supreme Court doesn't give a damn about the Constitution, either the federal or the state constitutions. And enough people would be duped into believing that, oh, it's just on people who make over $1 million. That's not me. It's not going to impact me. Well, yes, it will in two ways. First of all, as soon as they get it through, they'll start to lower the threshold. And what they want is an income tax on every single one of you. And if you think for 1 second that they wouldn't do that, or that at the same time they'd eliminate some of these other regressive taxes, I mean, wake up. You're just fooling yourself. But let's say they were to keep it at just people making over $1 million. Where do you think those people are going to go? They're going to leave. They're going to go somewhere else. The state has already shown that it doesn't want people who make a lot of money here. So what happens when people who they've targeted this new income tax at leave the state? Well, they were already going to spend all the money that the new income tax would bring in. So then that is going to fall on you, as so many other things do. Businesses leave. Okay, well, we don't want to cut our budget, so we're going to have to make up that revenue somewhere, and they come to you for it. So this is just insane. And Governor Bob Ferguson, he was at some leftist conference over the weekend, and he was asked by the State Standard about this new proposal coming from Democrats. And here's what he said. The headline, Washington Governor Ferguson skeptical of tax increases in 2026. During an appearance in Seattle on Wednesday, he also offered hints about some of his other priorities for next year's session. So he told the Standard that he's reluctant to support major new tax increases in the session that begins in January. He said, quote, we did raise billions of dollars in revenue earlier this year, and I'm skeptical of additional revenue at this time. Okay, remember when he was skeptical just a year ago of increasing taxes? Remember when he campaigned for governor this time last year, saying we need to get our budget in order and our spending and taxes under control? And then he spent the first 2 months of the legislative session pretending like he wasn't eager to sign new taxes. And then what did he do? He signed the largest tax increase in state history into law. So him saying he's reluctant to support any new taxes. Just a year ago, he said the exact same thing. And then he passed like $12 billion in new taxes. So I don't believe a word he has to say. And the fact that he won't come out absolutely and say, no, I'm not going to support an income tax, even if it's on a higher earners, tells you everything you need to know. So how does this factor into the election tomorrow? Well, even though it's an off-year election, as I've said, not the sexiest election, turnout for elections like this are typically on the lower side, there are a couple races that could make it more difficult for Democrats to be able to push through any damn tax they please. And a couple of those are the state Senate races in the 5th and the 26th. So state Senate in the 5th legislative district, which is like Issaquah area and around there. Victoria Hunt is the Democrat. Chad Magandons is the Republican. But he has been endorsed by the Seattle Times editorial board. They say for just this reason that we need the balance of power. Look, Republicans aren't going to get control of the state Senate in this election. There's no way. They probably won't have control of the state Senate maybe ever again. If not, like, it would probably take them 10 years. But adding a couple seats here and there absolutely helps. And that's why we've said, look, you know, Chad Magandons, he is a very reasonable legislator, and he's the person who we need in that position. Similar situation in the 26th legislative district out on the peninsula, in the Bremerton area. Deb Krishnadanson is the Democrat who was installed in that seat, who replaced the Democrat who went on, Emily Randall, to be elected to Congress. And look, I think Deb's, I don't have any gripes against her, except that she's voted party line. She will vote however Democrats want her to vote. And that's not what we need right now. We need an independent thinker. And so it's critically important that Michelle Caldeir can get that seat and can be a vote against new taxes in the Senate, can be a vote against a potential income tax in the state Senate. She's also been endorsed by the Seattle Times. And why do you care? Well, I think that the Seattle Times editorial board, as misguided as they are, they tend to be a little more reasonable on taxation and the economy. And so they have this trio of candidates who they're endorsing. Another one that we need to pick up, this isn't even a Republican, it's a D-on-D race. State House 33rd District, which is in the Berrien area, Edwin Obross is the Democrat who was installed into that seat. And running against him is Democrat Kevin Schilling. And Kevin has proven to be pro-business, anti-tax. He actually cares about solving problems like homelessness and crime. So he is absolutely someone who we need to win that race down in Berrien, because I don't think he's going to be just a check-the-box voter for the Democratic Party. I think he has, God forbid, the ability to think for himself, to think critically and independently about what's actually best for our state. And then there's also a race like this, D-on-D, in the 48th District for State Senate. Although I think this one is a little more uphill for the common sense candidate. So Vandana Slaughter is the current Democrat in that seat. State Representative Amy Wallen, a Democrat, is running to try to take that seat from her. Amy, much more pro-business, much more common sense, but she lost pretty bad in the primary. And I just don't see how she's going to be able to overcome that. But if you're in the Kirkland area, she's going to be on your ballot. She is on your ballot. So I would highly encourage a vote for common sense and a vote for Amy Wallen. Now, one of the things that tells you what's at stake here, even in an off-year election, and tomorrow we're going to dive into some of the national themes of what's happening, you know, what's happening in Virginia, New Jersey, New York City, City of Seattle with the socialism thing. So we have a lot of themes to discuss around the election tomorrow. But one of the things that gives you such a clue here on the West Coast in Washington State as to how important these races are, you can always tell by how unhinged the PAC spending is. Like, how unhinged are the PAC mailers? And when it comes to these particular races, where you have the people that I'm supporting, I think a lot of you are supporting, in each of those races that I just went through, they are, by any reasonable standard, moderates. Kevin Schilling is a moderate Democrat. Michelle Caldeer is a moderate Republican. Chad Magandans is a moderate Republican, by any legitimate, reasonable standard. But according to a political action committee called New Direction, all of them are mega Trump-supporting extremists. Yes, even Kevin Schilling, the lifelong Democrat, is a mega man. So this New Direction PAC has been putting out these mailers. And these are the mailers that they're targeting at, like, swing voters or, like, soft Democrats. So remember, PACs have all this information on you, whether you like it or not. And they know by the name and the household, are you a hard, reliable D, hard, reliable R, or are you squishy and somewhere in the middle? If you're squishy and somewhere in the middle and you're in one of these districts, you probably got one of these mailers. And they're just hilariously bad. First of all, can we start by talking about the Chad Magandans one? Chad Magandans tried to work for Trump. Now he wants you to hire him to the state Senate. They put a Trump wig on Chad Magandans. And actually, that's a really good edit job.
Well, I mean, it's a very blonde wig.
Yeah, well, a little more orangish yellow. Yes. Yeah. And Chad already has great hair. So how dare they cover it up,
rude,
honestly. But they put the guy, they photoshopped a Trump wig on him. And then poor Michelle Caldeer, apparently this was some outfit that she wore to like a derby horse race thing. It was like a pretty yellow floppy hat and this pretty yellow dress. I think they believe it makes her look like highfalutin. So they're using this in every attack ad against her. And they put her there next to Donald Trump, photoshopped her there, and called her ultra mega.
As if they're buddies that go to the derby together.
Poor Michelle Caldeer. And then you've got poor Kevin Schilling, who's a Democrat who doesn't even like Trump.
And like a bobblehead, but I guess.
I don't even know. And he's in a car. What is that? And they call him a MAGA man. And this New Direction PAC is just hoping that voters are so helplessly TDFs that they'll just see these and be like, oh, my God, I can't vote for these individuals, even if by no stretch are these like MAGA Republicans in any form or fashion. But here's the interesting thing with Michelle Caldeer's race. So I think that's the one that she has the most likelihood of all those races I went through to flip it and to win. I think that's fair based on her performance in the primary. And she's also, you know, she's a sitting state representative in that district. She's very popular. And so I think they're very, very worried about this race. So this dishonest political action committee, how would you know this if not for us, you know? So they are not only sending out these ultra mega mailers with her on it to the kind of squishy independents, squishy Democrats, but they're also pushing out a television ad and video ads online targeted at actual MAGA Republicans. So watch this ad that New Direction PAC put out about Michelle Caldeer.
Watch out, Washington. There is a rhino on the loose. No, not that kind of rhino. Michelle Caldeer, a Republican in name only. Caldeer lashed out against Trump and his agenda to make Washington great again. She took sides against the Pierce County GOP and abandoned the Republican caucus in Olympia. Caldeer even refused to join Jesse Young's efforts to end abortion. No more rhinos. Don't vote for Michelle Caldeer.
Poor Michelle. And she's just the nicest person. So now you have the same pack spending money to paint her as a MAGA Republican and spending money to paint her as a fake rhino Republican. Because again, they are hoping that voters are just dumb enough to believe whatever this lefty pack serves them. And so it's just, and that tells you that she really is just a reasonable person who can think for herself. And the funders of this pack will not be surprised. I guarantee off the top of your head, you can name three of them. Washington Education Association, for sure. The SEIU, big funder of this, healthcare, and one of the healthcare unions as well. So it's just obvious. Washington Federation of State Employees, Washington Education Association, SEIU, just ridiculous. So they don't want, what they want is an income tax. And what they want is to be able to push through anything that pops in the head of progressives in Olympia. And so whether it's a Democrat that would stand in the way of that, a moderate Democrat or a moderate Republican or any Republican that would stand in the way of that, they cannot allow that. They cannot allow for any sort of dissent. So I think that just shows you how absolutely, we've discussed this a million times before, PAC spending, really no matter who it's from, tends to be on the side of dishonesty. And they can operate independent of the campaigns. And so that way, candidates have plausible deniability. And they can say, well, I didn't say that. That's coming from a PAC. And by law, I'm not allowed to work with a political action committee. So whatever they do, I have nothing to do with that. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, okay. And so the PACs just go totally unhinged. So what do we say about the mailers again? Straight in the trash. Nicole even did that. Nicole did it without even saying, straight in the trash. Well, the recycling. Let's do our part for the environment and recycle it, even though I think that recycling just goes in the same bin as the garbage and heads to China anyway. But I digress. So poor Michelle Caldear. But that Chad Magandon's one with the wig is really, really something to behold. All right. Something that's on your ballots that actually, this is a fascinating conversation. Really, I think if you're living in any sort of blue state, you probably have something like this that's happening that maybe you ought to be paying attention to. So we have a constitutional amendment that is on our ballots in Washington State. It's Washington SJR 8201. Here's how it reads. The legislature has proposed a constitutional amendment on allowing money in Washington's long-term care fund to be invested. This amendment would allow the state fund dedicated to providing long-term care benefits for eligible seniors and people with disabilities to be invested as authorized by law. So you're being asked to either approve or reject this. So this goes back to Washington's long-term care program. Now, there's a lot of, I would say most, if not all, Republicans think that program is asinine, and even some moderate, more business-minded Democrats. It's this idea that they're taking money, of course, as we speak, out of each and every one of your paychecks. It goes towards the long-term care fund, which is supposed to just absolutely be a savior for people when they need help, you know, maybe at-home care later in life. And of course, it's all a sham. Because it's going to give you maybe enough to for a couple months of care at home. The cost of it is not going to be worth the benefit that you're going to receive. And what do we know about it? Well, it's like insolvent from the jump. It is absolutely not going to be solvent. And there was an initiative to try to repeal it because of lies of political action committees. That wasn't successful. And so now people are kind of stuck with this money coming out of their paycheck. So let's just set aside, for the sake of this conversation, how you feel about the long-term care program, because it's here and voters declined to get rid of it. So we're in this situation. So the question is there anything that can be done to save it from insolvency? If all this money is going to be coming out of your paycheck and we can't get rid of the program, well, yeah, then we deserve to be able to benefit from it later in life. And so how can we make sure that the long-term care fund has enough money in it? So this past session in Olympia, on a bipartisan basis, there was a little dissent here and there, but on a bipartisan basis, they said, hey, let's amend the state constitution to allow that fund to be invested in stocks and private equity. Right now, it can only be invested in like bonds and things that are a little like they're not going to get the crazy returns, but it's going to be a little more stable and reliable investments. So that's what this would do. And there are even some Republicans who said, hey, this is a great idea. We need to try to see what we can get, you know, if we can get more money into this fund. And so, as I said, you know, it had bipartisan support to send this to voters, and it has a lot of support out in the community. But whenever I see, here's a website for Approve 8201 that has all this list of people who support it. And I got to say, whenever I see WEA or all the Democratic parties, all the unions, SEIU, Real Change, which is like the homelessness industrial complex in Seattle. Whenever I see them saying they support something, my gut, of course, tells me, don't vote no. My gut, of course, tells me, vote no. Like anything the WEA supports, I'm probably going to be a solid no on. But then in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, Republicans supported this, many of them, and decided to send this to voters as well. So we wanted to get kind of two perspectives on this. On our latest episode of Swamp Watch with our friend Zach Abraham of Bulwark Capital, since he's our investment guy, I figured let me ask Zach about this and what he thinks. And he thinks that voting yes on this would be absolutely asinine.
Okay, so we're going to sit here and talk about how despicably these people manage public funds, yeah, and then we're going to give them carte blanche over another one? I mean, it's just, it's idiocy. Any Republican, again, it isn't even about the, any, if I get a vote in the state of Washington as a citizen that asks me if I want to allocate another cent for these guys to tell me where it's going to go. No, everything yeah they do is a disaster. All they do is incinerate money. And it'll be just like them to run into this private equity moment. They will be exit liquidity for a bunch of corporations that throw off that they're too dumb and unsophisticated to realize they're buying garbage. And they'll end up being exit liquidity for BlackRock. And meanwhile, their investors will take a 60 to 70. No, not their investors, our taxpayers, right? We'll take, if you don't like the decisions these people make with general mm-hmm budgets, why in the world would you give them purview over more funds? It's nuts.
Yeah, and I totally understand where he's coming from. And the bottom line question he asks is like, do you trust them to invest your money? And I guess my mind goes, absolutely not. But we spoke with Senate Majority Leader, or Minority Leader, wow, wishful thinking there, Senate Minority Leader John Braun, the ranking Republican in Olympia about this. He was one of the people who supported it and supported sending this constitutional amendment to voters. And he said, look, you know, on the whole, Washington State isn't good at managing money, but the state entity that manages these sorts of investments actually has a really good track record.
Our Constitution says you can't invest public funds in the stock market, essentially, mm-hmm, in nicer words, but that's what it says. Three times in our state's history, the voters, through a change to the Constitution, which means it goes through the legislature at a two-thirds majority, then it goes to the vote of the people, have said, we're going to exempt that. We're going to allow further investment. We do it for our pension trust funds. We do it for our labor and industry trust, our industrial insurance, workers' comp trust, and we do it for the developmentally disabled trust. In all three of those cases, the voters have approved to change the Constitution that allows our state investment board. And, you know, I've not always been a fan of state government, but if you had to pick one agency that does a good job, I would say it's the state investment board, arguably the best in the nation. They manage over $200 billion in assets. All this amendment would do is say for the funds collected for long-term care program, the state investment board can invest those in the markets. And what that means is instead of having to pay the whole bill out of additional payroll taxes that we can expect instead of maybe a 2% return, something closer, probably not as high, but the long-term average for the state investment board is about 9%. We're probably not going to get quite that high because of the difference in investing, but say we get 6% or 7%. That's the difference of billions of dollars in additional revenue to this program that doesn't have to come out of individuals' paychecks. So in my view, I can strongly dislike the program. I can believe the program doesn't work as well as it should, but also recognize the voters have said it's going to stay with us. Let's minimize the cost of the program. That's what the amendment does.
Yeah, and we talked to our investment guy, and he's hesitant of really anything the state does, especially when it comes to management of funds. So for people who might just be skeptical, like, hey, I don't trust the state to manage money, obviously, so why would I trust the state to manage this money? What would you say?
I think that's a healthy skepticism, but I say look at the data. Go look at the returns from the state investment board, whether it's with the pensions or with the industrial insurance trust. They've been enormously successful, and they've literally saved us hundreds of millions of dollars in our pension costs. And there's no reason to expect that the outcome in this case would be materially different. So I'm not saying trust me. I'm saying go trust the numbers. The numbers say this is a significant savings to the voters of the state of Washington. And as you said, you know, most of the Republicans and most of the Democrats in the legislature agreed. Now, they agreed for different reasons. I'd certainly warrant that. But in fact, in the Senate, we had more folks on the Democratic side disagreeing with this than on the Republican side.
Yeah, I think there's this article that came out amidst all this. I think it was last week where California lost like $500 million in money that they invested in private equity, and they invested it, you know, in like clean energy stuff. And so I think that came out, and it sort of freaks people out, understandably so. So in your experience with this government agency that manages and has managed these types of investments in the past, have they been willing to avoid sort of ideologically driven investments?
Yeah, that's one of the things that's made them so successful. So far, you know, they've been in place for several decades. So far, they have resisted the board that guides them has resisted, you know, partisan based or ideologically based investments. They've tried to just say, what's the path to the best return for the money that we are fiduciarily entitled or responsible for investing? And they've stayed out of that. And that has served them well. And they've been able to make long-term investments, and, you know, the returns speak for themselves. So now, I can't say that they won't change that, that the at some point they won't become ideologically driven, and that would, of course, change the whole ballgame. But we have several decades of them not doing that and performing at an exceptionally high level.
Yeah. So, I mean, the answer is, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, to be honest. Usually I can just very firmly tell you, here's how I feel about this based on, you know, what we know. I mean, John Braun is right. You know, their track record on investment for the state agency is pretty good. But there's no doubt that what they're looking to embark on with a long-term care program funds and investing them in this way in stocks and private equity is far riskier. It's not sort of this guaranteed growth, but, you know, the track record is there for a couple decades. So there's the information, you know, make up your mind for yourself. Obviously, a lot of us don't like the program to begin with, but if money's coming out of your paycheck and it's going toward this fund, you know, will this help it be more solvent down the road? So this might be one of those rare instances where I'm like, I can't tell you what to do. Well, I can never tell you what to do. But, you know, I can't give you a confident recommendation because I would hate to say vote yes. And then we get into a situation like California did where they invest in private equity in new energy and they piss away $500 million. And they'd be like, Brandy, you told me to vote yes on that. So maybe I'm just being a coward, but, you know, I can tell you I voted no. Is that fair? I opted to vote no on it. John Braun probably isn't going to like that. But my personal opinion was I didn't like the risk involved with it. So I opted to vote no. Now, while we had Senator John Braun, of course, with the election tomorrow, we did want to ask him about a couple other things, including the news came out about Democrats wanting to push this income tax on high earners, and also about the prospect as the Senate minority leader that, depending on the results tomorrow, his caucus could end up with two additional seats.
That's a huge deal on two levels, right? One is, you know, the current numbers in the state Senate are 30 Democrats and 19 Republicans. If we had 21 Republicans and they had 28 Democrats, that means I only got to go find 4 votes from the other side to stop something or make something slightly better with an amendment. That's a big, big deal when you're trying to find, you know, folks on the other side of the aisle to come with you. I think more broadly, I think it would send a huge signal to folks around the state that the Democratic majorities have simply gone too far. You know, $9.5 billion of new taxes is just too much, and this would be real pushback. Of course, the opposite is also true if we don't prevail.
Yeah, speaking of real pushback and stuff coming up, I have to ask you about this idea floating to create an income tax for high earners. First of all, it's not lawful, correct?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. What they're trying to do is they're cloaking it in a different cloak. I mean, they're saying it's a payroll tax paid by the employer, and they're trying to get around the Constitution by saying the employer pays it, not the employee. The net is the same, and I wouldn't count on our state Supreme Court to somehow uphold the very specific guidance in our state's Constitution. But the real impact is this affects two broad groups of folks: medical folks who typically have, you know, highly skilled folks paid at high levels, and tech folks who have the same thing. This is going to destroy, in my view, destroy our medical system in the state of Washington and send tech folks fleeing from Washington in great droves. And that is going to be enormously harmful to our broader economy.
Yeah, as if they're not fleeing in droves already. I just don't even, if I wanted tech to flee the state of Washington, I would do exactly what's been done over the last 5 years in the state of Washington. And then I would add this new tax.
Yeah, it's like they're completely, you know, they appear to be completely ignorant of how Washington State's economy works and the great blessings that have come with us. You know, we've enjoyed a very robust economy, really, for the last 15 years since the Great Recession. It's just grown and grown. We've been very prosperous as a state. We've seen that start to sag as the onloading of more and more taxes takes effect. And we're just starting to see the effect of the taxes put in place this year. I mean, we're just starting to see folks move. We're starting to see, you know, layoffs, growth not happening in Washington, happening somewhere else. This is what happens when you make big, you know, changes like this.
Yeah, it's not going to be pretty. And then as you kind of alluded to there, you know, AI is also leading to layoffs that perhaps don't have anything to do really with the strength of our state's economy or with the business climate, but it's just all exacerbating. Let me end by asking you about this. You, of course, commented on our whistleblower report about the state equity program, you know, really being used for self-dealing. What we realized, and perhaps shame on me for not covering these bills as they were being pushed, Republicans in Olympia already this past year tried to pass two bills that essentially, if they had been passed, would have dealt with the very issues that we're addressing in this article. So I guess we've now brought this to light. How much do you trust the state to actually look into this?
Yeah, I don't have a high level of trust. I'll tell you that. I appreciate that, you know, Joe Wynn, Secretary of Commerce, has said this is unacceptable. He plans to look into it. There's a big gap, you see, between, you know, someone in his role saying, I'm going to look into it, and actually getting to where we need to be, which is full transparency. If we put, you know, $250 million into this program, the voters should know where every single dollar went to, down to who actually got grants. Until we see that and we see that it is done, you know, either rightly or wrongly, and an appropriate action taken accordingly, I'm not going to be satisfied. I think we deserve that.
Will you try to run those bills again this year?
Absolutely. And more. I mean, this highlights, and I should start with this. I want to compliment the work that you and your team have done on this. This is fantastic reporting, and it shows the things we've been, you know, talking about Olympia for many years, that we have a one-party system that's never been held accountable and just does whatever it likes because, you know, nobody can see it, and therefore they face no consequences. This highlights, you know, one example, and don't, you know, I have no doubt there are more, where folks have been misbehaving and self-dealing and if not legally corrupt, certainly morally corrupt.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, as if it's not a surprise, and you mentioned there, I mean, this is only scratches the surface. Even within this one program, we have multiple follow-up reports that are coming. And one of the things that I will say, regardless of my lack of trust, and you seem to share it, of the state led by Democrats to look into this, the Black community is outraged by it. The Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle, you know, tried to put out a statement on its social media basically saying that, you know, this isn't true or it's misleading. And the number of people from the Black community who have commented saying you have some explaining to do has actually, I think, taken me by surprise. And so I think if we start to see people who should have benefited from this money but didn't as a result of self-dealing, if we start to see them speak up for themselves, then maybe we'll have a different result in Olympia. All right, Senator John Braun, we appreciate it. We will pass along your thoughts on the amendment to voters, because I know a lot of people are confused about what to do about that. And we'll see how the election goes in terms of increasing your numbers tomorrow. Thanks for being here.
All right, thanks for having me on. Have a great day.
So big thanks to Senate Minority Leader John Braun in Olympia. A lot going on right now. I mean, the biggest thing, as with any election, is just get your ballots in. It's not my job to tell you what to think, just to tell you and remind you to think and to think for yourself and not let any media outlet, including us, unduly sway your opinion without you taking a close look for yourself. We mentioned on the back end there the response to our whistleblower report with a new statement from the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle trying to discount our reporting on their self-dealing as part of a $250 million state program. We'll have more on that coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, the very first call you should make is to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. I always recommend, you know, check out a few real estate agents. Ask them, what can you do for me that other real estate agents aren't going to be able to do? And I think you'll like the answers that Wes Jones and his team have to give. First of all, they have a long, long track record in the Pacific Northwest. One of the things I hear most often from undivided viewers and listeners who've used Wes to sell their home is the level of communication. And that's key when you're making such a big kind of life decision like this. You know, maybe you're moving out of state. Maybe you're selling your home to downsize. We hear that from folks a lot who are maybe moving to Eastern Washington or something. And they just really appreciate the level of communication from Wes and his team and just feeling like they had a teammate every step of the way. So go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team, I think where they really shine is their marketing, making sure that your listing stands out, especially now where there are more homes on the market and homes that are sitting for longer. So you need to make sure that your listing stands out so you can get more feet in the door, more offers on the table. So reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth, might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle is, I would say, lashing out at us after a whistleblower report that accuses them of self-dealing in the state's community reinvestment program. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What do we do besides our jobs? And you're going to be hearing much more from us on this story because there's just so much more to it. And I think that we have a responsibility really to continue down this rabbit hole, not only as it pertains to the Community Reinvestment Fund, but other state contracts that aren't being audited, that aren't being examined with the rigor that taxpayers deserve. So this was our story last week, in case you didn't read it. It's available, no paywall, on Patreon and Locals. Whistleblower, state equity program became a fund for personal enrichment. So a couple years ago, just as a quick background before we dive into the new developments, the Democrat-led legislature, as a response to the war on drugs, said, we're going to fix everything that the war on drugs did to communities of color. And we're going to create what has now become a $250 million program. And we're just going to write checks to people based on skin tone for things like debt forgiveness, trying to help them buy a home, help them start a business, help them buy pot shops. It was like basically just a ton of free money to people based on skin pigmentation, which I don't agree with, obviously. But you would hope that the program exists. You know, there's a lot of things Democrats don't do that we would like them, or that they do that we would like them not to do. But in this case, they created the program. So at the very least, we would hope, as misguided as the program is, that there is proper oversights and checks and balances. And what a whistleblower told us is there's not. And she presented us with months and months of research that she had put together that showed that people who were tied to the BIPOC nonprofits that were contracted with the state to hand this money out, that in many instances, they were spending the money on themselves. They were giving themselves debt forgiveness, paying off credit card debt. They were giving themselves hundreds of, or their family members, hundreds of thousands of dollars toward the purchase of homes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And our report really only got into maybe 1% of what our whistleblower had gathered. And thus, you know, we have a lot more coming. So we do this story. We're working on it for months. We decided to focus that first report on the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle. Because it was kind of a way, you know, we saw a lot of self-dealing there. We wanted to make it easy for people to understand what was going on. So we focused on one of the nonprofits. And as part of it, we gave them several days. I mean, I think it was 4 full days to be able to respond to a detailed list of allegations. We went point by point in an email, included the CEO of the Urban League of Seattle, and included everyone who was mentioned in the report as benefiting in some way within the Urban League of Seattle, and laid out for them, left no secrets, what we were going to reveal in this report of ours. And they opted to just send us a basic statement back. And it said, you know, we take very seriously the management of these funds and admitted to no wrongdoing. So the report comes out and there's a lot of backlash within the Black community toward the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle. And ULMS put out this statement on their Facebook page a couple days ago. And again, this is in addition to, we gave them every opportunity in the world, 4 full days to be able to answer any of the accusations that we made. They said, the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle is aware of recent media reports and remains steadfast in its commitment to transparency, accountability, and equity across all programs, including the Community Reinvestment Program. Our organization operates under strict guidelines and eligibility requirements established by the Washington State Department of Commerce, ensuring that every applicant is treated fairly and equitably. We take all concerns about program administration seriously and remain dedicated to maintaining the public's trust in every aspect of our work. Now, here's the kicker. The allegations made about our organization contain false and misleading claims. We deny these assertions and stand firmly by our record. Now, this isn't an unusual, I would say, response to an organization that is under the level of scrutiny that they're now under. Deny, 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 deflect, deflect, deflect. But I will say, you know, when you come out and say this report contains false and misleading claims, but then don't articulate or enumerate a single one of those falsehoods, that is also problematic, and it simply doesn't ring true. Now, I they put this out across social media, and I took it upon myself to comment under it and basically say, hey, we gave your organization multiple days, and now it had been a full week, to be able to respond to this specific allegations of wrongdoing and self-dealing. And you, to this day, have not taken any opportunity to do so. If you had evidence that anything in our report was false or misleading, why would you not have told us about that prior to the publication of the story? Why would you not provide the public with that information as you're putting out a statement saying it's false and misleading? Something tells me that you don't have any evidence that anything in the report is false or misleading. As you guys know, and if you've read it, it's very detailed, and it relies not on conjecture, not on rumors, not on the word of a whistleblower. It relies on hard and fast documentation. It relies on public documents that have the names of people who work for your organization or their kids, and the money that they got from you in taxpayer funds. And so there really isn't any wiggle room for us to have gotten anything wrong, because the documents are the documents. But what I found so unbelievable, really, about this, because all of this is expected. I'm like, I'm surprised they haven't tried to sue us yet. I'm surprised they haven't called me racist yet. Mm-hmm. I was expecting to be racist on day one. But our whistleblower is black, so I think that shielded us a little bit. God bless Corey for being half black as a whistleblower. I think that helps a little bit. But I also don't care if they want to call me racist for pointing out what is clearly self-dealing within a program. But I think the unbelievable part is I was not expecting the responses that the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle got on their Facebook account. And what they managed to do by putting out this statement accusing us of wrongdoing, accusing us of spreading falsehoods and misinformation, is they actually created basically a treasure trove for us of new potential whistleblowers and victims. So if you go to the Urban League's Facebook page under this statement they put out accusing us of falsehoods, what you'll see is black person after black person after black person that are livid with the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle, saying basically you have explaining to do. People saying that they were left hanging by the Urban League. People calling for an investigation into the Urban League. And multiple people saying, Brandy, I want to speak on the record. I want to be a whistleblower. This person says, I worked at ULMS years ago and saw some concerning things firsthand. I'm glad to see investigative eyes finally on it. Thank you for covering this. Multiple people saying, Brandy, how can I reach you? How can I reach you? I got a call from, I won't say who, I was in DC over the weekend. I got a call from a very influential, well-connected member of the black community in Seattle who said, thank you for doing this. There is much more to be found. So I found it kind of unbelievable. I guess I wasn't really knowing what the response would be. And this to me is going to be, I think, the thing that brings this all crashing down, is the community that the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle is supposed to be serving is turning on them, because they see what we saw, which is self-dealing and people who happen to have the right skin tone and the right connections benefiting while other members of the community were left out in the cold, were left without money to help them buy a house, were left without help to get a business loan, we're left without help to get debt repayment. And you know what? They don't like it. So I actually have to thank the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle for trying to attack our credibility on their social media pages, because it's actually given more life to this story. And we are going to be connecting and telling the stories of some of the individuals who saw that post and decided, you know what? It's time for me to speak up. Good stuff. You love to see it. You really do. All right. Coming up next, 10 years. Speaking of anniversaries, I said it's the fourth anniversary of Undivided this week. It's also the 10th anniversary since Seattle and King County declared that we were in a homelessness state of emergency. We'll check in on how that's going. First, mention Zach Abraham, our friend at Bulwark Capital, earlier on in the show. We appreciate his expertise on the investing issue that we discussed. And Zach is having his final live webinar of the year coming up November 20th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. So if you're concerned with whatever's going on, it might be the AI bubble, which definitely has some folks concerned about how inflated the market is. So are you confident in how your retirement portfolio is positioned for 2026? If you're not sure, if the answer is no, I'm not confident, Join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham, for his free review preview live webinar, November 20th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. They'll discuss the impact AI is having on the market, a preview for 2026, how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios. Plus, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register now for the free November 20th webinar. And while you're there, schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. Wow, how time flies. Just 10 short years ago, Seattle and King County came out and said the homeless crisis is so bad here, we have to declare a state of emergency. And of course, 10 years later, the homeless crisis is even worse. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. And in fact, Future 42 had a hilarious, actually tragic and sad, but hilarious cartoon on this very subject that was just so spot on. Now, I remember this press conference. I'm going to play a bit from you in a moment. I mean, I was a fairly new TV reporter in Seattle. I'd been in Seattle for, gosh, maybe 4 years. And I remember when former Seattle Mayor Ed Murray came out and said in this very dramatic fashion, you know, what we all saw, which is homelessness is getting really bad, and we have to do something about it, so we're going to declare a state of emergency. And then after he did that, he put out this really sappy, dramatic video.
This morning at 8:31, I signed a proclamation declaring a civil state of emergency in the city of Seattle in response to the growing homeless crisis in our city. We are in a moment in our history where decades of service cuts, growing income inequality, and the untreated issues of mental health and drug addiction has finally resulted in a human crisis seldom seen in the history of our city. And together, I am sure that we can lead the nation in finding a way forward.
Or not. Or not. I hate to laugh about it because at the time he was right. It was a human crisis that our city had not seen. And at least at the time, Ed Murray was able to, for all his flaws as mayor and as a human being, at least at the time, then Mayor Ed Murray was able to acknowledge at least a couple of the real reasons why our city was facing such a crisis, an untreated mental health crisis and an untreated addiction crisis. And again, that was in 2015. It was really before, at the time it was heroin. At the time, it was a heroin crisis that we were in, and that was predominantly what you saw people out on the streets addicted to. And then things got even worse because then fentanyl came into the picture. It was far more deadly in far smaller doses. And so our homeless crisis only got worse and worse and worse. And it wasn't just Seattle. Dow Constantine, a fearless leader of King County for 16 years before he got a promotion to be paid even more after failing, he put out on the same day a proclamation of an emergency. And he talked about how many homeless people there were in the county at the time. And I look at this, these numbers now, again, this is from 10 years ago, where he says, in 2015 alone, nearly 10,000 people are experiencing homelessness on any given day. It's like, oh my gosh, God, if we had 10,000 people now in the county, we'd be like, wow, we are really making progress. But back then, 10,000 was considered so bad, it had to be an emergency. And for the record, it was. But everything they did, the city of Seattle and King County, under Democratic leadership, from then until now, 10 years later, everything they've done has made it worse. And they believed that by declaring a state of emergency and spending more money to fix the problem, they thought, well, for sure, that'll make it better. But of course, as we know, that created the homeless industrial complex that we see today, where more money only fuels the crisis. More money has led to a situation where this is so profitable for the nonprofits who work in this space that they will never fix it because they never want to see the check stop. Our friends over at Change Washington did an article, it's great, detailing the timeline and all the failures that have led up to this point. It's called Housing First in Washington, A Decade of Failure and Tragedy. And they detail some of the numbers here. Homelessness in King County has risen 68%. From 2015. And I mean, for that sad video Ed Murray put out talking about the depth of a human crisis that we've never seen before, I wonder if I could go back in time and tell him, hey, 10 years from now, it'll be 68% worse. What he would say about it. They say Seattle and King County has become a magnet for attracting America's homeless. A recent Discovery Institute survey found only 19% of those experiencing homelessness in King County attended high school here. They are attracted to the region due to the 5,000 services provided to them and the lax laws regarding drug use and encampments, and that's a no-brainer. You want to declare an emergency on homelessness, yet in the meantime, you've basically decriminalized, de facto decriminalized drugs, made it more difficult to remove encampments. It's like everything they've done, of course, it's designed to make it worse. Like no sane person would think any of this stuff would make it better. It says, led by King County, Washington State has the highest number now of chronically homeless people in the entire country. Both King County's All Home Project and the King County Regional Homelessness Authority's Partnership for Zero were expensive, failed projects that wasted resources and failed to remove homeless individuals. And I think that's good to point out is not only did you have this larger homeless emergency that not only failed to yield any results, made the crisis worse, in the last 10 years, you've had all these individual side projects. Like they mentioned there, the Partnership for Zero. This was like rich companies that even came in and said, we'll put a bunch of money and in a year's time, we're going to eliminate downtown homelessness. And what happened? It didn't matter. Homelessness got even worse because their solutions weren't solutions at all. It says the number of annual homeless deaths have risen more than 500% since 2015. Again, go back to that sad, sappy video from Ed Murray. Oh, it's a human crisis. Yeah, well, everything you did from then to now in 10 years has led to a 500% increase in the number of annual deaths of homeless individuals. And yet we continue to elect the same people. We continue to believe the same people when they tell us that, oh, I have the solutions. I'll fix this. They belong to the same political party. They belong to the same progressive movement. Change Washington got into some of the lack of accountability that's led to this place. And that's the only explanation, right? Is the only way you can have a situation like this, where you've spent billions and billions of dollars on a problem only to make it worse, is a lack of accountability. Because in any private sector, anything, if you spent billions of dollars towards solving a problem and the problem got exponentially worse, the money would be pulled like that. And you'd go down a completely different path to try to fix it. But not in the public sector, where it's your money and they don't care about your money. They don't look at it as actual money that you worked hard for and they just piss it away. So they said an audit revealed that massive fraud has likely taken place with the distribution of $1.8 billion in annual grants from the King County Department of Community and Human Services. Not a surprise there. A Discovery Institute study recently found that the King County Regional Homelessness Authority paid 17 organizations more than $1 million to provide emergency housing. And only 5 of them submitted reports about what they did with the money. Can you imagine getting $1 million of taxpayer money and you're not even required to submit a report about what you did with the money? And we're surprised that things haven't gotten any better. They also talk about a new report from the Capital Research Group that details how violent extremist groups like Antifa have infiltrated local homeless organizations and have become recipients of taxpayer money that is meant to help those who are homeless. This was brought up during my roundtable on Antifa at the White House, where you have these organizations like Stop the Sweeps that are Antifa aligned, that go out there and physically try to block police and city workers and county workers from removing deadly dangerous homeless encampments. Gee, I wonder why, because they're anarchists. They want like a complete demise and destruction of civilized society. So of course they want people living on the streets in filth and squalor. And then they also mention in here our whistleblower report, which has to do really with housing, right? We're so concerned. Housing, they say it's a housing issue. Housing is so expensive. So we've got programs like the one we covered in our whistleblower report. And what are they doing? Well, they're just spending the money on themselves. They're just helping their friends and their allies. Imagine if we had even basic level accountability for the money that's spent on homelessness. Imagine if we looked at a service provider and said, we gave you X amount of money, these were our expectations, here's what you did, so now you're not getting money again. Or if you spent the money on things you shouldn't have, we're doing clawbacks, we're taking that money back, and you're gonna have to find a way to pay it back to us. Why can't they do that? Why is that really asking so much? That's like base level expectations for anyone contracted with a government entity that's spending your money. And of course, what is the overarching reason why this has been such an epic failure? You know what it is. I know what it is. I say it all the time. You could probably say this sentence with me. We cannot solve a problem that we refuse to properly identify. And in the homelessness space, we have elected leaders who for years have continued to perpetrate the lie that the homeless crisis is what, Dow Constantine?
We know too well that many of our neighbors simply do not have a safe place to call home. While many would like to argue otherwise, homelessness is at its core a housing issue. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's not. And, you know, again, I keep saying I should stop calling it homelessness. It's a drug crisis. It's a drug crisis, but it results in people being out on the streets, suffering in filth and squalor and ruining the quality of life for everyone. So you have them pushing this lie, and it is a lie. It's not just a difference of opinion. It's a lie that this is the result of people who don't have a house and don't have a place to live. And we know that's a lie because in the low-income apartments that we spend millions and billions of dollars on, what happens? Well, people die in there too. And they just turn them into de facto drug dens. You haven't improved anyone's circumstances. You haven't dealt with the underlying reason why they were living on the streets in the first place. They're drug addicted, they're mentally ill, or both. And until we have a radical shift in both our approach, but also how we characterize the problem, 10 years from now, we'll be talking about the 20-year anniversary of the declaration of a homelessness state of emergency, and we'll be talking about how it's gotten even worse. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. And this is certainly one of those areas where just going on your own social media pages, in your own circles, your own family and friends, and explaining to them why homelessness has gotten worse and worse and worse and worse. That is one way that you can turn your frustration into action, because we have to get people to start thinking about this differently and start understanding that the party that got us here will not get us out of it. The party that calls this a homeless crisis does not deserve a dollar of our money to try to fix it, because they won't identify what the problem actually is. All right, coming up next, we'll talk about some national election news, like Yes on 50 down in California. Wow, what an insane situation that is. First, if you are looking for ways to save money as a family, understandably so, costs have increased in Washington state, gas prices are absolutely out of control, and you're looking at your budget and being like, well, I'm not bringing more money in, so what am I going to do to save some money? Check out your insurance. If you've maybe done, you know, one of those quick things on the internet to find the right insurance for your family and thought that it was going to be, you know, the cheapest and save you a bunch of money, reach out to our friends at First Mark and just make sure of a couple things. First of all, it doesn't do anything to be paying for insurance that isn't going to cover you in the event that the unthinkable happens. So that's just an absolute waste of money. So you need to make sure you have the right insurance, but then of course, the right insurance at the best price. Rather than try to figure that out for yourself, have First Mark Insurance figure it out for you. They really are just an exceptional company, a local company, been doing this for a long time, and you never pay them anything. So to do the First Mark Challenge is free, and then you never pay First Mark Insurance a dime. So do this, go to firstmarkinsurance.com, schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. It'll be about taking me like half hour to an hour is what I typically hear from folks. They'll go out, they'll shop the market for you. They'll come back with their recommendations. And hey, they might say, actually, the current insurance you have is great. And it's, we can't beat that price. And then, you know, no harm, no foul. Or they'll come back and say, like, so they've told so many undivided viewers and listeners, we can save you hundreds of dollars a month. That's thousands of dollars a year. Man, think of the extra Christmas gifts you could buy for thousands of dollars a year. You could even buy me something, you know, if you wanted to. No big deal. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. Just to be clear, don't buy me any Christmas presents, okay? I don't need anything. I've got everything I need. All right. In national news, so of course, we have Proposition 50, which I think is going to be one of the big, there's a couple big national themes we're following tomorrow. The socialism issue. Mamdani in New York. Katie Wilson in Seattle. I mean, have people really lost their minds to believe that socialism is going to fix anything at all? So that's a theme that we're going to be watching. We're going to be watching what happens in Virginia. Of course, the attorney general candidate there who, you know, wished death on his political enemy. Is that, you know, disqualifying in the eyes of voters? Or have we really reached this place where you can wish that your political enemy dies and say that you want to shoot them and that you want their kids to die and you can still become a state's chief law enforcer? I think that that race will tell us a lot about the state of political discourse in America, for better or for worse. So we're going to be following that. And then one of the big ones, perhaps the biggest one, that will also have an impact on us here is Proposition 50 in California. This is being pushed by California Democrats. And here's how they're characterizing it. They're not even hiding it. This is about gerrymandering all the districts so that they can basically block out any Republicans at all from representing California in Congress. It says, what is Proposition 50? Since day one, Californians have been on the front lines of protecting our communities under attack by the Trump administration and its MAGA Republicans. With Prop 50, California voters have the opportunity to fight back against the Republican cuts to health care, the rising cost of living under tariffs, and the cruel abductions and forced removals of immigrants. Proposition 50 is a direct response to a Republican power grab orchestrated by President Trump and state leaders in Texas, who redrew congressional district lines to gain five more seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. Prop 50 proposes new lines for many of California's 52 congressional districts, which would negate the five Republican seats drawn by Texas. Under the proposed lines, Democrats could gain up to five seats in the U.S. House. With a majority in the House, Democrats can fight back against Trump and Republicans' MAGA agenda. So they're saying, oh, Texas, gerrymandering, bad, attack against our democracy. So let's just attack our democracy, too. I mean, this is all just one big giant race to the bottom. Now, even the LA Times says this would absolutely disenfranchise Republican California voters. They question whether it will survive a legal challenge. I think that's sort of TBD. And I even saw some maps that said if they get their way, like Republicans will have almost like zero representation in Congress in for the state of California. So it's all just insane. And this is something being spearheaded by California Governor Gavin Newsom. Here he is rallying voters over the weekend.
Thank you for all you have done to get us to this remarkable moment in this campaign. But more importantly, thank you for what you'll do over the next 72 hours to bring home this historic victory for democracy, for our republic, and send a message to Donald Trump. Hell no, we are done. We are done with being treated like this. Thank you all very much for everything you've done. And let's get out there and vote yes on 50. Thank you, guys.
I mean, first of all, oh God, I hate listening to him. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it so much. I swear to God, if he's elected president in 2028, which I think is highly unlikely, I want a lobotomy. I want a lobotomy. Honestly, I just don't know how I'm going to be able to survive that. It'll be just horrible. But the thing that bothers me here, and like, look, they're being honest about what they want to do, at least. Like, yeah, we're going to go in and gerrymander Republicans out of Congress. So they're being honest about it, except in the sense that they're painting it as something they're doing for democracy. And the fact that they're painting it, it's destroying democracy when Republicans do it. It's saving democracy when Democrats do it. It just shows that we've totally lost any sort of sense of moral consistency in our country. And both parties really are guilty of this. But I think it is going to pass in California. I mean, all polls seem to suggest that Gavin Newsom and his allies have done a good job as painting this as a fight against Donald Trump. Now, it's a slippery slope, of course. I mean, if California does this, what's to stop every other state, Washington state, red states, from just doing this as well and just creating blue strongholds, red strongholds that can never be swayed? There are no such thing as swing seats. And every state, every congressional district is just reliable red or blue. And where does it end? Where does it go from there? And you say you're doing this to fight back against Trump. Trump's going to be the president for three more years. Trump's going to be the president for three more years. And so, I don't know. It's just insane, this place that we've gotten to. And I do believe it's going to pass in California. And so we'll just have to see whether it withstands legal challenges. Hopefully the answer to that is no. But I just don't know. And it's going to be a win for Gavin Newsom if he can pull it off. More from Gavin Newsom at the end of the show. I want to talk quickly about this Wall Street Journal article that I think is one of the most important pieces of news coverage to dismantle the radical gender ideology phase that we're in as a country. You know, for so long, any legacy news outlets have been completely unwilling to really touch the trans issue in a meaningful way and sort of the some of the insanity around it. But to acknowledge a theme that we've been talking about on the show for some time, that LGB is not the same as T. That this whole rainbow alphabet mob thing, the trans movement and the radical gender ideology movement has absolutely co-opted the gay rights movement in a way that I think is going to be detrimental to the gay rights movement and might even send them backwards. And now we're starting to see an outlet like the Wall Street Journal acknowledge that and take a serious look at it. I think that that is incredibly important. So here's the headline that they put out. I highly recommend going to read it. The growing divide in the Rainbow Coalition. More gay people are speaking out against the gender ideology of trans and queer activists. And we've had several guests on the show from the LGB Courage Coalition that have talked about this very issue. They're both lesbians. I told you, the elder lesbians are going to save America. The elder lesbians are going to save America from this rainbow nonsense. Because they're sitting here and they're like, okay, we fought all these fights. You know, we fought for marriage equality. And now all of a sudden, we've got furries who've latched themselves onto our movement. And they want equal rights. And men want to use women's spaces. And they want to act like their fight is just as righteous as our fight. And they've had enough of it. They're totally over it. And they see the potential danger in this. So here's what the Wall Street Journal said. More than 3 dozen in-depth interviews with gay men, lesbian women, bisexuals, and transgender people, along with surveys and several new books coming out next month, reveal a complicated and contentious relationship between the LGB and the TQ plus components of what advocacy organizations and the Democratic Party refer to as LGBTQ plus people. While gay and lesbian people emphasize that they oppose discrimination and harassment of transgender adults, they resent being force-teamed, taken over, or erased by trans and queer ideologues, especially when gay people constitute 90% of those Gallup categorizes as LGBTQ plus. I mean, I guarantee that most, I can't speak for gay people, but we know a few gay people. I have no gay friend that I know who doesn't feel that way, who isn't like, why are they latching on to us? Why are they treating like gender fluidity as the same thing as being a man, but being gay? They're not alike at all. It makes no sense in the world. The Wall Street Journal goes on to say, there have always been fault lines within the Rainbow Coalition, but in the last 10 years, ever since the right to gay marriage was secured in 2015, further divisions have emerged and expanded, along with growing rancor and vitriol, all of which belies the overriding image of inclusion touted by advocacy groups. These disagreements stem from radically different ways of viewing identity. Gay people typically see their homosexuality as fundamentally grounded in biology and based on attraction to people of the same sex. Transgender people instead prioritize gender identity, defined by the Human Rights Campaign, an LGBTQ plus advocacy group, as, quote, one's innermost concept of self as male, female, a blend of both, or neither. Meanwhile, queer theory argues that both sex and gender exist on a spectrum and are often fluid, allowing for labels like non-binary and gender queer. And so you have like gay people who are like, this isn't a choice. This is, I was born this way. This is who, you know, I am attracted to. And then you have people who think, oh, it's fluid. I can be a man one day, a woman the other day, the next day. I can be both. I can, you know, whatever it is. It's a total spectrum. And so these things really are fundamentally at odds with one another. But I do think that having more LGB people on the side of sanity who are pushing back against the radical gender ideology, especially pushing back against the medicalization of children, you know, cutting healthy breasts and other organs off, I think that is really the way that we dismantle the whole charade. Because when people like us speak out about it, it's like, oh, white, conservative, angry, straight, cis lady or whatever it is, and Democrats will discount it. But as I said, I would love to see Democrats en masse discount the elder lesbians who are coming out in droves saying, we don't support this, it's gone too far. So it's always people who are part of the side that go down these rabbit holes are always the best messengers to get us out of those periods of time. So I think it has to be them. I think it has to be the LGB that bifurcates itself from the TQ plus, and hopefully in doing so alienates, and I hate the word alienates, but alienates that sort of radical ideology from the mainstream. Now, again, I don't care if you're a trans adult. And that's why I'm kind of hesitant to use the word alienate. I don't want to alienate you as a human being. I don't hate you. I don't, you know, think less of you in that sense. But you're not entitled to just make up, oh, this is my human right. This is my, oh, I get to use women's restrooms and I get to compete against women. And if you disagree with that, you're a bigot. That's one of the things they always do, is they like make up something they say is a human right. They make up a civil right. It's like, no, that's actually not a civil right. No, that's just because you say something is your human right doesn't mean it is. And so I think that this is the beginning of the end, really, for the radical gender ideology movement. It might take a couple years, but I think we'll start to see Democrats sort of falling and the dominoes fall. And then we'll be back to just maybe some semblance of sanity. Although it could go in the other direction. And then all of a sudden you could have like 2 months. They're like, oh, we have to split off. That's fine. But now we get all these celebrations too, just on our own. So you'll have the gay pride parades, and then you'll have the trans pride parade. You'll have the gay pride month, and then you'll have the full trans pride month. They'll keep the separate flags, and then we'll have to do it twice a year if things really get crazy. All right.
I'm flagged out. Too many flags.
No new flags. I will create a law day one as the president. No new flags. Maxed out.
Oh, I like that law.
Thank you.
Hey, you should present that to Trump next time you see him.
Yes.
One flag for all.
No new flags.
American flag.
He can do an executive order for no new flags. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll get to our daily subscriber show pool coming up next. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing can help you out with a whole slew of things, not just roofing. They can do, which I probably need from them, is exterior cleaning of your house. They can help install, clean gutters, attic insulation, or custom holiday lighting, which I think is really cool as well, because you know what? We all have the husband who probably wouldn't go out there and set up the lights until a day before Christmas. And I'll be like, what took you so long? Valentine Roofing, just kidding, babe. You're a go-getter.
I'm sure. Now.
Yes, I'm sure if I asked you to put up holiday lights, you'd definitely do it right away. Anyway, or maybe you do need a new roof, and Valentine Roofing can, of course, help you out with that as well. And the best part is, you know, if you're thinking I've got a leak or something, you might not need a new roof. You might just need a leak fix, and they can do that for you without pushing you into getting a new roof. And if you do need a new roof, well, they've got flexible financing options, including zero down, 0% interest. Taking care of your home has never been easier. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING. And please tell them that you heard about them here on Undivided with me, Brandi Cruz. All right. How's my voice hanging in there? Is it horrible to listen to?
No, it's fairly normal. I thought, you know, a couple hours ago I was a little bit nervous. But
well, we were taping with John Braun before the show, and I warned him. I said, oh my gosh, I'm having an issue. And you could see in that interview, if you watch it back, I look like I'm crying. I look like I'm in tears. And it's because when I went off camera, Nicole mute my mic and I just hack up along, and John was a pro because he just keep answering the question. So yeah, it was much worse before the show. So maybe I'm getting better. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals and X. Again, really quick before we go to it, huge thank you to everyone who has supported our show over the last 4 years. It is crazy to think. I quit my job in TV news 4 years ago. It is crazy to think. I mean, that's when Mike was just my boyfriend. I was living with him, but I'm like, can I quit my really well-paying job? And he's like, sure, I got your back. But I could tell he was terrified. And then, like, within a day, because of all the support from you guys, it became clear that it was going to be fine and that I wasn't going to be, like, in the poorhouse and I was going to be able to make a career out of it. And it's just been great to, and so just cool to see how much we've been able to grow the show from one show a week, pre-tape, to four live shows a week, to a Sunday show, and everything in between. So I just appreciate every single one of you who've spent your hard-earned money helping us grow this movement. I mean, I never take that for granted. It's just, I mean, you have allowed me to continue this as a career, doing something I love as a career independently. I mean, there's no possible way to thank you enough for that. And hopefully you found it meaningful, and we're only going to keep going and keep growing and keep trying to save this state that we love and this country that we love. So I asked you guys, as part of our subscriber show poll, As Undivided marks its fourth anniversary, what do you want to see more of in the coming year? Investigative reporting, national news coverage, long-form interviews, or nothing, Brandy, you're perfect. I'm expecting it to be 100% nothing, Brandy, you're perfect. Nicole, what is your answer?
Hey, I, you know,
nothing, Brandy, you're perfect?
Of course, no, of course. Kidding. I think you're perfect and we're perfect as in the show, but, you know, there's always room. I think investigative reporting is important for us. I think it's important for our region and the state because there's not enough of it anymore. So
yeah.
I'm into it. So I hope we can find more time and more resources to do that. So.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that so Miranda's coming on full time in the new year and she's going to take off our plate a lot of social media stuff, which does consume a lot of both of our time during the day. So I think that does give us more time to focus on the content of the show every day and just improving that and getting, you know, more exclusive stories out there. I think we do a pretty good job of trying to make sure that our show has, you know, good journalism and reporting in addition to commentary, which is important, but more investigative reporting like the whistleblower story is,
and
I think,
we couldn't
what we
do
need.
It without these. Oh my God. Listeners,
you guys give
viewers,
us so many good tips.
They have to keep sending them.
100%.
Amazing.
And that seems to be the consensus. It's split between nothing, you're perfect, and investigative reporting. But more of you, about 60%, say more investigative reporting would be great. And I think that's the goal. Alan says, you are near perfect, but if you could cut back on anything, if you cut back on anything, don't cut back on investigative reporting. Yeah, my word that we will not do that. Jersey Girl, I love the Undivided team, and thanks to Antifa, I found you. A couple years back, I went up to Linwood, Washington to support the Olympus Spa with a nonpartisan group of women. The Trantifa folks put out a lot of propaganda about how we women advocating for our sex-based rights and Brandy Cruz and Andy Ngo were all fascists. I had no idea who Brandy was, and since Antifa called her a fascist, wow. I knew I should go check her out for myself, so I'm eternally grateful
thanks,
for Antifa.
Thanks, Antifa.
Thanks, Antifa. Selling subscriptions one at a time. We appreciate it. Let's see. Lisa says, nothing, you're perfect was my first choice, but your investigative reporting is much needed in this state. Karen said, I like the variety. The investigative is particularly important. I very much appreciated the coverage of the legislative session. Yeah, and we will, of course, every legislative session, make sure that we're giving you good synopses every week. Let's see. Sarah, I'd love to see more investigative reporting similar to your recent whistleblower report. I think more stories like that will influence Washington voters. I like reading compliments. Norman, you guys are fantastic. I like your passion of commitment and letting us know what's going on in politics. Thanks. Well, you know what? The passion will never cease. 4 years in, the passion's still here, although I think Nicole and I are tired often. Very tired often.
It's exhausting,
but
for sure.
But it is, but it's passion's still there.
I mean, but, you know, the state, man. I think over the weekend I was in Indiana and, you know, in the land of school choice and,
yes. And the air just smelled
less
better.
Taxes and it felt freer.
Yeah. Todd says, Brandy, congratulations on Undivided's fourth anniversary. It's been inspiring to watch it grow into a vital space for nuanced, fact-driven conversations in an era screaming for them. As someone built to seek truth without the baggage of agendas, here's what I'd love to see more of in the coming year. Long-form audio specials. With podcasts booming, drop some unscripted hour-plus episodes tackling one thorny issue with experts who disagree, but respect the grind for common ground. Love that. Love that idea. And here's one thing I will say, you can take that down, is, you know, I was in D.C. over the weekend, and it was a meeting of independent journalists, and I just had such a great time at it, and there was, Laura Logan was there, James O'Keefe was there, who, you know, he's a goofy dude, but the stuff he does is arguably very important. And one of the common themes, so we're basically meeting to try to, you know, I wouldn't say structure independent media, but try to help each other through this weird period of time where we're all trying to figure out what we are and our place in this environment. And one of the themes that kept getting brought up, which I so appreciate, is the need for independent media to hold itself to rigorous journalistic standards. And I could not agree more. I mean, that's one of the things I'm very concerned about with the existing independent media environment. And I've said it a million times. You hold yourself, the only standards you have are the standards you hold yourself to and the standards your subscribers and followers and listeners and viewers hold you to. And that's kind of, and the same is true for legacy news, right? I'm not saying that they have exceptional standards, but that's why we're seeing them fail. So if we then turn around and say, oh, we're independent, but we don't have rigorous standards, then what's to say we're not going to fail too? And it's the Wild West out there. And I do think that it's this, you know, you've got everything from, you know, a citizen streamer who takes their cell phone and goes out and covers something, all the way up to, you know, entities like us that more of a business model and more of a structured thing, and even like the Free Press, which just got sold for, you know, $250 million to a legacy news organization. And so, you know, in there, I think there is the possibility that it gets so big and wild that it fails and that it becomes untrustworthy, just like the legacy media was, unless we each dedicate ourselves to saying, no, like, we're going to be independent. We're going to work directly for our viewers and our listeners. But even if we're opinion driven, we have to have journalistic integrity. And I hope that you think that we have, you know, we will correct things when we need to. I want to do opinion, but I want it to be based in fact. And, you know, same with the whistleblower report. It's like, you know, we can have our opinions about that and self-dealing and all of this, but it has to be bulletproof. The reporting has to be exceptional, or we're going to lose trust just like legacy media does. So I was glad to be in D.C. and hear that other independent outlets are thinking that same thing. Like, we need to keep this on the rails and keep this movement going, because that's what's best for the country. All right, let's get to some comments. Man, my voice is going to hold out the whole show. Who would have thought? On election eve, Chuck Heller says, no taxation without representation. Well, unfortunately, they are state representatives and people did elect them to office. And that is taxation with representation. Jared, it will start with high earners, then 500K, then 250K. Then it'll encompass everyone. Oh, yeah. I give it a matter of a couple years.
Oh, yeah. Once before they get it okayed.
It's just an income tax. The last Robespierre, popularity in socialism always rises when life becomes more and more unaffordable and the wealth gap increases. Because in fantasy land, it all sounds great. Lessons are learned the hard way. And it's crazy we have to keep learning the lesson on socialism. Like, it's really, there are many not so distant lessons already on socialism. What's happening in New York City, he doesn't have a special brand of socialism that's going to all of a sudden work. Like, nothing has changed. Giving free people stuff, it's never, giving people free stuff, it's never free. And then when you take a bunch of money from other people to give all these other people free stuff, those people leave, your tax base shrinks, and then everybody's back to where they started.
Maybe that's a testament to how poor our education system is right now.
Yeah.
Is that
we're not teaching people about
commies. We
have
these millennials coming out of school not realizing that socialism is not a good thing.
Yeah. Just wild. This one is funny. That Michelle Caldier, poor Michelle Caldier. The ads, she can't do anything right. She's too far to the right. She's too far to the left. And then they're using this yellow dress she wore. And now it's so funny. It says, R on Patreon said, Michelle Caldier wore that yellow dress as her Halloween costume to troll them. And I did see a video. So all these ads, yeah, she's got this yellow dress on with this yellow hat. So she wore it as her Halloween costume. Yep. Michelle from the ads, which I think is very funny.
Yep.
Conservatives divided over Amendment 8201. Lil Miss J, I'm very leery of how any government agencies saying they will invest our money. I don't trust them, honestly. The return of the money to the people would be better. I agree. In a perfect world.
See, that's where I really struggle with it, because I was against it. I actually don't pay into it because I got out of it.
Didn't Dory get you out of it?
Yes.
Man, that is Dory. Yes, I don't know why I didn't listen to Dory to opt out when I had the chance.
Yep. And so I part of me wants it to go, like, to fail.
Yeah.
So that we can get out of it that way. But then I'm sure there's something that will not let it fail.
And no, we'll just they'll just raise taxes. Just raise taxes.
I get it.
Let's see. Greg, vote no on 8201. Look at what happened to California state workers' retirement, which is what we talked about. Mm-hmm. Corey Corrado. Reject it. That's a no-brainer. Who's going to trust the government with money? No thanks. On the Urban League, lashing out over our whistleblower report to their own detriment. Chris Elder, when will the rest of Washington wake up and realize that programs and laws based on color of someone's skin that put others ahead or before others are racist? Yes. And there were some people on that thread saying, who's going to listen to Brandi Cruz? She was at the White House with Donald Trump. It's like, okay. Doesn't make the story untrue, but if that makes you feel better.
I love that. Like, oh, there's something in there that's not true. So we're not going to tell you what.
All right. Like, what is it? What is it? Hmm. Because if they had come and we sent out, it was a long list of questions. It's like 20 questions. And Because we don't spring things on people like that. Like, we're going to give you ample opportunity to respond to these claims. And yeah, if they had said, actually, this is misleading or you got this wrong, like, of course, we don't want to get anything wrong. But I'm very confident that we did not in this case. And we wouldn't have published it if we had any doubt in any of our reporting. Let's see here. Big Princess. Light is the best disinfectant. Whenever I see Big Princess, I don't know why. I think of a big pit bull dog with a crown on its head. I just feel like everybody names their pit bull Princess if it's a girl.
Yeah.
And then that's just what I think of. I don't know why. Maybe that's why your screen name is Big Princess. 10 years since the homeless crisis declared, Necro Two Shoes, the director of the video, went on to make the sad animal donation scam videos. It did read like a, in the arms of the angels. And it's just like, it's so bad. I wonder what Ed Murray's up to these days.
I can't watch those.
I'll tell you what, though. This is going to be unpopular. Somebody's going to probably clip this and put it on the internet.
Why are you going to say this so bad about
I'd
animals?
Rather have Ed Murray in this moment than Katie Wilson.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I would. I'm sorry. I hate to say it. Watermelon Shug. Why do I assume there would be some level of accountability? The thinnest, sheerest veneer of accountability, at least. Nope, none. Let's see. A couple other super chats. Matt Gilbleasy. Shama walked so Katie could run. Happy 4-year anniversary. Yeah, Shama Sawant walked so Katie Wilson could run. Matthew Cook, song notes emoji. Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind. Is that a song? I don't know. Must be.
Got you.
Papa Woody Brandy, you sound Must fine, be. Sis. Do I, though? Because I really feel like I don't.
You really do sound normal. So.
In my head, I just feel like,
ugh. I know that feeling.
Lil Miss J, $20 super chat. This is for a bottle to share with you all for your wonderful anniversary. I was with you before you started your channel here and was on the streets with the rioters. Tell me, do you still have those pink coveralls? I don't know what that is. I think you might be confusing me with someone else. Let's see. De Pluribus Unum. Fox News ran a story about Antifa hit list this weekend. Does anyone know if Brandy's on it? I'm not on it. I was, which is kind of offensive, isn't it? But yeah, they didn't put me on their hit list.
A little
so I guess
late
I'm
to that hit list story.
Yeah, that was out like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We talked about it on our show. Allison Griffin, I'm so thankful I found your show. Listen every day I can. Great. Love it. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for all your support. Mm-hmm. We do appreciate it. We'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next, which will just end the show with a bang. But first, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, one of our wonderful show advertisers, and they can really help you just navigate this climate that we're in. And if you think that rent control was, you know, they were going to end it there. Oh, we won't bother landlords anymore. Yeah, think again. We've got a legislative session coming up in a couple months, and I'm sure they're just cooking up ways to make your life miserable. So you need to have someone down there advocating on your behalf. So become a member of RHA today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They can also help you just navigate the existing environment, the rules, the regulations, the new laws like rent control. So you want to make sure that you are not doing that on your own. rhawa.org, rhawa.org. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. As I said, I just want a lobotomy if Gavin Newsom is going to be the president in 2028. I just don't even want to think about it possibly happening. But I think one of the things that just throws me for a loop, and maybe Democrats aren't going to like him. Maybe they don't like him. Maybe they just tolerate him as a useful idiot for the time being. But this guy is such a shapeshifter. This guy, over the last 6 months, he's tried to, you know, act like he's a conservative. He's tried to, you know, then he went all the way to the other side. And now he's taken on the persona of Donald Trump, thinking that that will somehow make him more popular. It's all very weird. But he did a sit-down interview and delivered probably of any politician I've ever seen the statement that lacked the most self-awareness I've ever seen in my life.
Nothing I dislike more than the politician that is, sits there and lies to you. And we all just sit there rolling our eyes going, give me a break.
Give me a break. I got to agree. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you. Oh, I gave it at the last minute. Being here. Thank you for tolerating my sore throat. I'm hoping to feel much better tomorrow because I got to say, I feel better than when I came in today. And if Nicole gets sick, I have no workers' comp for you. Sorry. No sick days. No sick days. I don't know. Do we have sick? I don't know if you've ever taken a sick day.
No.
I think when either of us are sick, we just come to work anyway.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. I mean, you can. We can. You can if you're sick.
I know.
Okay. I just
call Daryl.
Yes, Daryl could fill in. Yeah, and then you roll. Can fill in for me if I'm sick. Daryl can fill in for you. You can host the show.
All right. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, they do. Anyway, happy 4-year anniversary to us. Sign up to support the show, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. Okay, bye.